If you'll turn with me to Genesis chapter 42, while you're finding Genesis 42, I'll kind of remind you of some of the things that have been going on. You remember at 17 years old, Joseph, we're kind of doing Joseph's life right now. At 17 years old, he was sold off by his brothers and to some slave traders who took him down to Egypt. He ended up being a slave in Potiphar's house, you know, and then he kind of rose up and we talked about the bloom where you're planted thing, that this guy just seems to bubble up to the surface wherever he is, whatever's going on, the guy just seems to bubble up to the surface. And it's really exciting to look at his life. And he has shown us a type of Jesus Christ. And so we've kind of been talking about that as we've gone along also in this. And then Potiphar's wife kind of had the hots for Joseph, and so he ends up fleeing. She's trying to have sexual relations with him, and he ends up taking off and running out of there, and she grabs a hold of his big-sleeved coat, and off comes his coat, and she's got the coat, and he's out the door without his coat, and then he gets thrown in prison. Again, the interesting thing to note is that is punishable by capital punishment, and yet that's not what was given to him. So it was very interesting that Potiphar did not just immediately have him executed. So that was kind of interesting in and of itself. Maybe he knew what his wife was like. I don't know exactly. That, again, would be speculation, but it is interesting that it went that way. Then, of course, we know, because this is maybe not the first time for all of us that have gone through this before, but we know that God's got a plan. I really like the providence of God in these studies. I really think that's so awesome. Read through Esther while we're going through this and just digest Esther and look at the providential hand of God. The word God is not mentioned once in Esther, but yet it's all about God, all working. That's what I like about it. It's all God working in the background and all of what the Lord can be doing. The providential hand of God in the midst of our lives. What a great thing to remember. We'll talk about that a little bit more this evening. Well, he's in jail now. He's in prison. And all of a sudden, the guy bubbles back up to the surface. You know, the head of the prison just says, man, this guy's just a great guy. He works hard. He was industrious. He was trustworthy. You know, he just had a lot of good character qualities about him. And the main thing that he notices, wow, his Spirit of God is with him. He's upon him. And he notices that. There's something noticeable, something different about him. And so he goes ahead and lets him bubble up to the surface again. And these two guys come in that are work for Pharaoh. And one's the baker and the cupbearer. End up there. And so they have these dreams and they say, well, hey, you know, they can't find anybody. Pharaoh can't find anybody to interpret the dreams. And says, well, this is, I'm getting ahead of myself. He interprets these two guys' dreams. The one guy gets released. The one guy gets beheaded. The guy that gets released is the cupbearer. He goes back to Pharaoh and he tells him, hey, remember me. Don't forget about me, dude. You know, don't forget. Well, I'm in here. When you get out, I've been falsely accused, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's all he says. Again, this guy's not whining. He's just dealing with his situation every day. He's working at things, trying to come put things together. And I really admire that about him, about Joseph. And I think there's a lot to say for him in that regard. Then as he goes on, all of a sudden Pharaoh has these dreams. None of the magicians, you know, the soothsayers of their time, none of the, you know, people that get out there, you know, the star watcher people and all that stuff. They get out. None of them can do, they can't figure any of this out. They still can't figure it out and say, hey, man, we can't figure it out. And then the cupbearer remembers, yeah, wait a minute, there's this guy in prison, man. I know he can help and he can interpret dreams. And so they get a hold of Joseph. Joseph goes, he interprets a dream. It talks about 7 years of good, really good times in crops and in the cattle, 7 years of just plenty. And then goes into 7 years of absolute disastrous famine. Now, all this while, God's at work. All in the middle of this, God's doing something. God's doing something through Joseph. God's doing something in Joseph. Something's happening all the way through this whole thing. And then this all starts to set in now as the 7 years of good times. And Pharaoh says, hey, man, there's nobody so righteous as you. We got to find some, you know, but there's nobody like you. Would you be the one, basically, is what happens to run everything? you know, run the whole country, basically, is what happens to him. You organize all the gathering up of all the goods in the good time. You organize all the distribution during the bad time. You're just no one but you. You're right next to me, except for the throne. That's the way that it all went. Again, the guy just bubbles right back up to the surface, you know, and God's just using him. You know, I think there's some key things, if you study the character of this guy's life, that are a big focus in this. He goes to interpret the dreams, and what does he say? You know, I'm so glad you guys finally noticed me. You know, I do have this gift, and I'm able to do this. And, you know, he doesn't say anything like that, does he? He says, no, man, he goes, this is all just something, it's only God can interpret dreams, really. Only God can really help you. This guy just keeps bubbling up to the surface. He gives God the glory. He points all the attention to Jesus Christ, and that's really what we ought to do. You know, any chance we get. You know, we've talked about this in a quick reminder of it. Paul and Silas, you know, they're they've done these great miraculous things, and the people are just so, they become so excited about Paul and Silas. They go out and they're going to sacrifice a bull to him, and this is Zeus and so and so that have come down from their gods. You know, that's what they start just going off on it all. And they go out in the middle of the crowd. They rent their garments. You know, they pull their shirts on. They say, "No, look, we are people. We're guys just like you." I think that's so important. You know, because God's at work in your life, because you're familiar with the scriptures, because of these things, there's many blessings that you have, many many blessings that are given to you. And you have you know that in the midst of struggle, there's help in Jesus Christ, and you have hope outside of everybody else, and you know, because you know the Lord, and you've got so much going for you. It's so important, though, to acknowledge that and point other people to that, because that can help them too. You know, and so I think this is where Joseph's just got a great thing going. Well, let's pick it up. They've had now this first 7 years, and he's been storing up all the goods, and Joseph now is 37 years old. And verse 1 of chapter 42, when Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his son, so he had probably, you know, think about this. There's all these caravans traveling to and fro around. You know, we're thinking, well, gosh, did somebody give him a call, or does he just know this? I mean, well, there's no phone lines. So, you know, that didn't happen. Nobody flew over with a helicopter and dropped letters to him to let him know about. You know, we got to get into the. A caravan was probably passing through. Some people said, "Yeah, you know, how are you guys getting by?" Well, we're having a tough time. Well, you know, they've got grain down in Egypt. You know, so wow, really? Yeah, man, there's some guy down there, some really wise guy that's stored up all this stuff. Wise guy in the right sense of the word, stored up all this stuff, and you know, have all these this silos of just grain, and it's just awesome, man. This guy's great. It's really cool how it's all worked out. And so, Jacob says to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" I like that. Why are you guys just sitting around looking at each other? Ain't gonna get done. Ain't nothing's gonna get done that way. You know, it's great. He's just, you know, he's just kind of giving his kids the what for on it. You know, nothing's gonna happen unless you get out there and do something with it. Verse 2. And he said, "Indeed, I've heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there, that we may live and not die." He says, "Man, we're running to the bottom of the barrel, scraping the bottom of the barrel. Head on down there and get what you can." Now remember, in the story, ultimately, not only is he a type of Christ here for us, not only is he a type of Christ, but he represents something to us regarding even our own salvation, which is kind of interesting when you see it in this light. Because they're going down there, and Joseph is there for the salvation of his family. Jesus came here for the salvation of humanity, you know? And the thing is you can't buy it. Salvation is not for sale. Watch what happens as we go through this story tonight, as we see what goes on with Joseph and his life. So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, lest some calamity befall him. He says, "Man, you know, you guys can't be trusted with your littlest brother. Like you jacked, you know, something happened to Joseph when I sent him out. We're not going to take that chance again." So he doesn't want to let that happen. And the sons of Israel went to buy grain among those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land, and it was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. Man, you think he's having some radical flashback? Man, he's just like, you know, what a deal. I think I've seen this before. Now, he knows, you know, who they are. As we go on, we find out he knows who they are. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them. but he acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. And not only that, he's not speaking, you know, in their native tongue. I mean, he's not talking, communicating with them, as you'll see in a minute. He's just kind of being rough on and spoke roughly with them, or kind of harsh to them. And he said to them, "Where do you come from?" And you got to understand, Joseph's in a real place of authority and power, too. And he's, you know, trying to use the position that he's got wisely. I really do believe in my heart, I believe that Joseph has been gaining insight, because this guy's so perceptive. He's tuned into the heart of the Lord. And the guy, I think he's gained some insight into what the Lord might be doing. You know this guy's longing to see if he's 37. This is 20 years later now since he got thrown into the pit. Now look at what's gone on for this guy. And this guy's still got a great attitude about everything. What a just an excellent example to us to grab a hold of and just embrace that and just say, "Man, Lord, help me." If your attitude stinks, accept it and make the necessary adjustments. Say to the Lord, "Lord, you know what? I think my attitude stinks and I need to do something with this. I need to give it to you and look to you in the midst of my circumstances." You know, that's all we can do. I don't think this is just some message of positive thinking, or I think this is God-focused thinking. And when we get God-focused, God really helps us. He helps us to right our perspective. You know, it's like when you got this super huge dilemma going and you're trying to decide, "Man, how am I going to handle this? You know, I got this thing I'm really perplexed about. I'm not sure how I'm going to, I can't even get my brain around this matter. I can't emotionally quite deal with it and grasp it all. And I can't get," you know what I'm saying about getting your hands around something, or your heart or your mind around something to where you just can't quite grasp it. Maybe even intellectually, I just can't quite grab that concept. It's not coming to me right. I'm not getting it. And I think it's so great when we start to pray and we start to focus on the Lord and we see how big and majestic and awesome God is. Spoke the world into being. It starts to put everything back into focus, into my life and your life and what we're trying to sort out. Is that too big for God to sort out? Is it too big for divine intervention to help you gain understanding? I think Joseph was such a guy as this, that always was seeking to get the intervention of the Lord into his life, to find out, "Man, I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to see what God does." And he just has that attitude all the time. So they came down and bowed their faces down before to him. And Joseph saw that it was his brother. He spoke roughly with him, middle of verse 7. Then he said to them, "Where do you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." And so Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. Then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them. And he said to them, "You are spies." So he remembers the dream. Now, let's think back to a moment about the dream. There's some components missing in the dream. Not everybody's there. All of them bowed down, even the moon and the stars. You know? Not everybody's, this guy's a sharp guy. So I'm trying to track with what, you know, he might be thinking about, you know, because he sees, hey, not everybody's here. I recognize you, but not everybody's here. You know, and he knows that the fulfillment of this is everybody. Everybody's going to bow down. Isn't that cool? How you can see how the Lord's just at work with this guy, man. He's just thinking, he's plugged into what the Lord wants to do. I think he got some kind of divine insight from this as to what might be coming. Do you know that? Isn't that true? Now, do you think when he got thrown in the pit, he saw this happening 20 years later? I doubt it. See, you and I don't either. It's kind of a day, a week, a month. Then you can look back and say, okay, I see God at work in what's been going on. Then you go a few months, a year, and you look back and say, wow, I can see how the Lord's hand was leading and guiding. And again, it's that providential hand of God where, man, I didn't even really realize how the Lord was leading and doing things and putting things together. And then you look back and say, and then you start, as you look back, then you can start even more to look forward and say, man, by faith, you know, I can see the Lord at work. I can trust the Lord at work. I can see and I can trust. I believe by faith. I know that he's done this in the past. I've watched him, and I believe by faith that he'll just continue what he's begun. That's encouraging to me. You know, that God's at work. God's doing that he wants to do in and through all of our lives. So they say, you know, he recognizes him. He's Joseph remembers the dream. He says, you guys are here. You've come to see the nakedness of the land. And they said to him, no, my Lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all one man's sons. We are honest men. That's not exactly true all the time. Your servants are not spies. That's true. But he said to them, no, but you have come to see the nakedness of the land. And they said, your servants are 12 brothers, the sons of one man, in the land of Canaan, and in fact, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no more. But Joseph said to them, it is as I spoke to you, saying, you are spies. In this manner, you shall be tested by the life of Pharaoh. You shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. So this is how we're going to start getting them all, pulling them all down there. Says, no, we're going to have to test this out. We got to make sure you're really straight up guys, that you're not going to try and spy us out and then do something. Send one of you and let him bring your brother, and you shall be kept in prison, that your words may be tested to see whether there is any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies. He says, this is the only way I can tell for sure what's going on. So he put them all together in prison 3 days. And Joseph said to them in the third day, do this and live, for I fear God. Now, it is interesting when you go back and you find out that he actually used the word Elohim for God. So he's using a term that a Gentile, you know, heathen guy wouldn't use this term, which is kind of interesting. He wouldn't be talking like that. They should be picking up. They're just not grabbing it. They're not seeing what's happening. You know, they still don't even recognize him. They don't quite get it. He says, but if you're honest, so they just, that one just, phew, that one blew right by. And he says, if you're honest, if you are honest men, let one of you, of course, he knows them quite intimately, we might remember, let one of your brothers be confined to your prison house, but you go and carry grain for the famine of your houses. Okay, fair enough. One of you guys stays, the rest of you goes, y'all take some stuff with you and so on. And bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified, and you shall not die. And they did so. Then they said to one another, we are truly guilty concerning our brother. For we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. Well, remember how he was wrestling, and he was fighting and scrapping while we were shoving him into the pit? And then when we dragged him back out and shoved him off, and they roped him up, chained him up, and took him off down to Egypt. He's crying and pining the whole way, and he's pleading with us, don't do this to me. You know, but you know, we didn't listen, and now this is what's happened to us. Oh, great. Now, they're speaking in their native language. He understands everything they're saying, but they don't get it. They don't know any of this is happening yet. Isn't that cool how the Lord's at work? Oh, man. Isn't that great? And Reuben answered them, saying, did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against the boy? And you would not listen. Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. So there, you know, and again, we'll talk about it a little bit further, but, you know, guilt is a tough thing to start carrying around in these kind of situations. You start carrying that load of that around. And, you know, it just, you got to do something with it. Something's got to happen to it. We'll talk about that a little bit in a minute. But they did not know. And Joseph understood them, for he spoke to them through an interpreter, and he turned himself away from them. And I love this. I just get off on this so much. He turned away from them, and he just wept. Man, he loves his brothers. He loves his family. He knows they jacked him, but he's able to overlook the jack, you know, because he still has a heart for him. There's family. And, you know, they just did what they did. It was foolish. Yes, it was wrong. Yes. It was spiteful and it was a bad deal, but he loves them, you know? They're the family. Oh, so he just turns away and he weeps there. And then he returned to them again and talked with them, and he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. So he's hauling him off and hanging on to him. And then Joseph gave a command to fill their sacks with grain, to restore every man's money to his sack, and to give them provisions for the journey. Thus he did for them. So not only this is the thing that's so interesting. When God's doing something, and if we talk about it in the sense of salvation, because Joseph is being used as a type of Christ to provide salvation for actually the people of Israel, this gets really, you can get real into it and really study it, because these guys represent that and represent that nation as they come down. Joseph, representing the type of Christ, comes wants to minister and provide salvation for them. They're trying to buy something that you can't buy. They're trying to buy something that no one can buy. You can't buy the salvation. The salvation is just that free gift. Man, it's just God's grace, and it's just written all over this. It's just, you can see it as he restores it back to them. The Bible says that the Lord will even restore the years that the cankerworm ate away in our lives. As we give our lives to Jesus Christ, God will restore those things, you know, that we've wasted and squandered and stuff. The Lord can restore and bless, because he's a God of grace and a God of mercy. And so, but there's the only way is through repentance. And so these guys, you know, they get all this stuff. They load up their donkeys with the grain and departed from there. But as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey feed at the encampment, he saw his money. And there it was in the mouth of his sack. And so he said to his brothers, "Oh, my money has been restored. And there it is in my sack." Then their hearts failed them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, "What is this that God has done to us?" Thinking, you know, this is a... We're being trapped here. We're being set up. Isn't that the way it goes sometimes? You know, our minds, you know, when we first, if you remember back being drawn to the Lord, you can kind of start, you got to think back away, some of you, but if you start thinking just to that thought of the Lord pulling you into a relationship with him and drawing you in and pulling you into that place of a walk with him, that as he's starting to show his grace towards you, you think, you know, it's just not possible. I can't see how this could happen. It's just not possible. How can God love me? I know who I am. I know what I've done. How, you know, and we start trying to go through this whole thing, and we can easily get taken away with our own minds. What is this that God has done to us? I mean, you know, maybe this is a setup. You know, maybe we're going to be, you know, this is just really a big sick joke, or, you know, how could this really be? And then they went to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan. I think he is setting them up, but he's setting them up to draw them back in still. He is setting them up, but he's doing it in a right, awesome way. And they went to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan and told him all that had happened to them, saying, "The man who is lord of the land spoke roughly to us and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, 'We are honest men. We are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is with our father this day in the land of Canaan.' Then the man, the lord of the country, said to us, 'By this I will know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me. Take food for the famine of your household and be gone, and bring your youngest brother to me, so I shall know that you are not spies, but that you are honest men. I will grant your brother to you, and you may trade in the land.' And it happened, as they emptied their sacks, that surprisingly each man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid." They really thought, "Oh my goodness, man, now we've got all our money." They really think, you know, they think we just ripped it off, you know. We just came down, we took the grain, we've got all our money, we've got all this grain. It's just a bad scene. "And Jacob, their father, said to them, 'You have bereaved me. Joseph is no more, Simeon is no more, and you want to take Benjamin? All these things are against me.' Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, 'Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands and I will bring him back to you.' But he said, 'My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave.'" He says, "Man, I can't deal with that. I can't deal with the loss of another son. I just can't deal with it. It's too much for me." And if we back up just a little bit, as he says, "You know, I'm not going to do this. I won't do this." He says, "All these things are against me." And it is interesting when you think about that, how often we too would speak this way when we don't see or trust in the providential hand of the Lord. Not trusting in the providential hand of the Lord, it can seem bleak, it can seem dark. And some of us have seen some dark days. Some days where it's just like, "Man, I'm hoping that there's some daylight in this with you, Lord, somewhere. Or I hope your presence is even still with me, Lord. I just don't sense anything. You know, I'm not feeling anything anymore. Fortunately, we're not asked to walk by our feelings. You know, the Lord's not required that of us. We're to walk by faith. We're to trust the Lord, not just our feelings. But it is discouraging sometimes when we're used to really sensing some radical empowerment or something that somehow we aren't sensing the same of. That doesn't mean God's presence isn't there. That doesn't mean God's not at work. We aren't touchy-feely about all of it. That's not what it's all about. It's trusting that we know, that we know, that we know, that we stand on His Word, that we trust God at His Word, and that He said He'd never leave us nor forsake us, and that He's with us and He's ever-present with us. And no matter what goes on, do we really trust in Romans 8:28, that all things work together for the good to those who love God and are called according to His purposes. That all things, it's not just one thing or some things or a few things, but all things work together for good. This guy is a guy that really knows it, Joseph. And his dad is doubting this. And again, he's here referred again to as Jacob. You know, not Israel here, but Jacob. All these things are against me. And yet this is the very thing that's supposed to be pulling him into the salvation or the saving of that family unit, much less the preservation of the nation of Israel in that sense, and not recognizing what is really going on around him. We'll close it out with this in Philippians 2, verse 12. Paul writing here, "Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you both to will and to do for His good pleasure. Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. Yes, and if I am being poured out as a drink offering on the sacrifice and the service of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. For the same reason, you also be glad and rejoice with me." When he starts off with the therefore in verse 12, we know that we got to know why what it's there for. You know, we got to back up. What's in reference to? And it's all talking about those previous verses there are talking about the humility that we saw in the person of Jesus Christ, that he was willing to make himself of no reputation, to take on the form of a bondservant and come in the likeness of men, that Jesus was willing to take on that kind of a form of subservient, you know, willing to serve and willing to just do the grunt things and the things that were necessary. I think sometimes it's so easy to lose sight of that and to miss all the good things that God has in that. And that God honors that. It says, therefore, God has highly exalted him. There's no doubt that God honors that. And he says, ultimately, that we're to have that kind of a mind. Says, have this kind of a mind in you. Be like-minded with the Lord. Jesus was willing to take on that kind of form of a servant and to deal with hardship and to deal with the struggles and to go through all that he went through for you, for me, because he loves us. He says, have that kind of a mind. You know, and I just see Joseph as just being so much like that, and how oftentimes we can go more on the Jacob side of it and just go, man, all these things are against me. I can't see how any of this is going to work out. I can't even see how God is even around this, in this, through this, or near this. And we've got to trust the Lord and let the Lord have it.